emblazoned with the outline of the Shah Izinde Mosque in Samarkand, built by the conqueror Timur the Lame, the badges on the shoulders of the men at the prison camp in eastern Prussia bore the words Biz Allah Bilen, God is with us. These soldiers of the Third Reich hoped to march to a different destiny from the one their Nazi masters had chosen. You are the foundation of the Eastern Legions, the Uzbek schoolteacher turned Nazi political officer Bey Mirza Hayat told them. One day, when the Eastern countries are free, you will be the backbone of our homeland. Last week, as Islamic State-linked jihadists slaughtered over 100 people at the Crocus Theatre in Moscow, Russian President Vladimir Putin alleged the West pulled the strings behind the hands curled around their Kalashnikovs. The claim was deeply disingenuous, intended to deflect blame. But it illuminates a savage, little-known war that has run for over a century. For more than 2 years, jihadists drawn from Ajnad al-Kavkaz, part of al-Nusra, which was al-Qaeda's front organization in Syria, have been fighting Russia alongside Ukrainian forces. Led by the charismatic Rustam Ahiev, the jihadists hope the war will lead to the liberation of their homeland in the Northern Caucasus and Chechnya. Ever since the destruction of the Islamic State's so-called caliphate in 2016, numbers of central jihadists have also resettled in Ukraine, including the group's Minister for War, Cesar Tokhoshashvili. The improbable entanglement of jihadism in the Ukraine-Russia war is the outcome of a tortured history in which the Nazi Führer Adolf Hitler, the Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin, and the Central Intelligence Agency all played a part. It's one of the most incredible real-life conspiracy stories in the history of the world. Even as the Second Chechen War raged in 1999, reducing the city of Grozny to rubble, Putin angrily declared, I quote, Russia is really standing at the forefront of the war against international terrorism, and Europe ought to fall on its knees and express its great thankfulness that we, unfortunately, are fighting it alone. Like Putin or hate him, his anger was understandable. The United States at that time was engaged in cultivating the Taliban in Afghanistan, hoping to expand its leverage in energy-rich Central Asia. Europe had other things to worry about. For centuries, the Tatar and Nogai raiders had pillaged the agricultural lands of Eastern Europe in search of slaves. 2 million people, historian Darius Koladzeshek has estimated, were taken from the kingdoms of Muscovy and Poland-Lithuania from 1500 to 1700 CE alone. The slave trade provided the economic foundations for the emergence of the ethnic Turkic regions of Central Asia as great powerhouses of civilization. Even though the slaves, unlike Africans trafficked to the Americas, became integrated into Ottoman society within a generation or two, the raids, however, left deep scars among the Slavic peoples of Eastern Europe. Late in the 19th century, though, the wheel of history turned, as it always does. The Russian Empire pushed eastwards through the Crimea, capturing the homelands of the Chechens, Ingush, and Dagestanis. Further east, the Khanates of Khiva and Kokand, the Emirate of Bukhara, and the Tatar raiding center of Gyoktepe were seized in a lightning campaign that began in 1865. The Khanate of Merv fell without a shot being fired just a couple of years later. Imperial Russia's efforts to restrict the influence of Islam by limiting the number of Hajj pilgrims and choking religious tithes and endowments provoked multiple rebellions, historian Martha Olcott has recorded. Then the cotton trade collapsed during the First World War, together with the empires of both Moscow and Istanbul. This led to a region-wide insurrection led by the Turkish revolutionary Ismail Enver. Ferghana, a stunningly beautiful valley at the intersection of what is now eastern Uzbekistan, southern Kyrgyzstan, and northern Tajikistan, also saw multiple uprisings, often spearheaded by clerics of the region's powerful Sufi brotherhoods, historian Beatrice Manns has written. Following his rise to power in 1924, the Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin stamped out those rebellions brutally and imposed collectivization of lands. He arrested clerics and shut down religious institutions. To the Soviet ideologue Lucian Klimovich, Islam was an enemy to be crushed. I quote, an anti-scientific reactionary world concept, alien and inimical to the scientific Marxist-Leninist concept. Like the Nazi Waffen Schutzstaffel divisions they fought alongside, the Muslim regions Germany raised to fight the Soviet Union faced crushing defeat in the Second World War, historian Jonathan Trigg writes. Those they hoped to liberate ended up paying a terrible price. In the summer of 1944, Crimea's Tatars were collectively rounded up by the Soviet secret police, accused of Nazi collaboration, and deported to Central Asia. Thousands died during long journeys east in airless sealed cattle wagons. 1,000 more succumbed to malnutrition and disease in collective farms and gulags. As this genocide unfolded, journalist Ian Johnson reveals, the US and the United Kingdom had already begun recruiting the remnants of the Nazi Muslim legions, hoping to use them against the Soviet Union. Gerhard von Mende, the Nazi bureaucrat who had been in charge of the legions, and his Uzbek protege Vali Kayum Khan emerged at the center of this new Cold War covert operation. Despite his role as a high-ranking Nazi official, Johnson observes, von Mende was soon living a lavish life in post-war West Germany, complete with a house, a car, a maid, and even a horse. This despite having no ostensible source of income. Efforts to stage operations using the Central Asians, though, were betrayed by Soviet spies in West Germany as well as the UK. The most famous of them, the top MI6 defector Kim Philby. Egyptian Islamist leader Saeed Ramadan emerged as a key figure in subsequent efforts to recruit Islam as an ideological weapon against Soviet communism. Late in 1953, Ramadan met with US President Dwight Eisenhower as part of a delegation of anti-communist Islamic clerics. The next year, he was granted asylum in Germany, escaping a crackdown on the Muslim Brotherhood by Egypt's secular nationalist government. French journalist Caroline Forest has noted that Ramadan emerged at the vanguard of Islamist causes worldwide. In Pakistan, Prime Minister Liaquat Ali Khan wrote the preface to one of Ramadan's books and gave him a slot on national radio. Ramadan became a close friend of the ideologue Abul Ala Maududi, among the principal theoreticians of the idea of the Islamic State. Leading a mosque set up in Munich as a hub for the European operations of the Muslim Brotherhood, scholar Gilles Keppel records, Ramadan emerged as a link between rich Middle East donors, the Islamist fighters, and Western intelligence services. The fires the CIA hoped to ignite would finally catch light in 1979 when the long jihad began in Afghanistan. For the third time in a century, Russia found itself at war with its restive Muslim nationalities, this time fighting against Chechens like Shamil Basayev, who had learned their craft from Al-Qaeda and the Afghan Mujahideen. Following a disastrous campaign against the jihadists in 1994-1996, Putin went to war in Chechnya again in 1999-2004. This time, Russia won, but large-scale terrorism followed the brutal Russian offensive. For example, jihadists killed 334 people, including 186 school children, in the village of Bezlan, following that up with suicide bombings in several cities. The Fergana Valley also saw intense jihadist violence, with the Islamic movement of Uzbekistan battling the regime of Russian-backed dictator Islam Karimov in the 1990s. Tajikistan saw a brutal civil war from 1992 to 1997. And there was sporadic terrorist violence in southern Kyrgyzstan too. Following the military defeat of these movements, thousands of Central Asian and North Caucasus jihadists drifted towards Syria, joining Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. There, they were joined by a gamut of Russian-speaking jihadists, scholar Caleb Weiss notes, all of whom played a key role in fighting both the Syrian government and the Russian military forces who intervened to prop it up. The destruction of the caliphate, though, again left them without a homeland and nowhere to go. In 2016, Ukraine's domestic intelligence service, journalists Pavel Pianazek and Alyona Savchuk reported, made 46 arrests linked to international terrorist groups who had used dozens of crossing points to locate themselves in Kyiv and Kharkiv. Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan and Turkmenistan citizens were held last year for plotting Islamic State's attacks in Germany and the Netherlands, had all used Ukraine first as a transit point to make claims for asylum in Europe. From history, Putin has probably learned that geopolitics knows few moral qualms. Like the West did after 1945, he fears, it might again use jihadist terror as a tool in the new Cold War that is rising again. The Russian president's handling of jihadist groups in the region hasn't been without opportunism either. Long before the fall of Kabul, Russia cultivated a deep partnership with the Afghan Taliban, hoping to put pressure on the United States and secure Central Asia's flanks against the Islamic State. The road leading to the Crocus Theatre led past many blood-soaked landmarks, each evidence of the cynicism of great powers and their short-sighted failure to address festering resentments. Even today, as Russia and the West face common threats from jihadists, there's very little hope they'll be willing to make common cause against a common enemy. I'm Praveen Swamy, and I'm a contributing editor at The Print. Thank you so much for watching Security Code.